Browns, Talking Birds.
Made possible by the generous support of the Birdwatchers General Store, Orleans, Cape Cod. Birdwatchersgeneralstore.com.
And proudly sponsored by Ocean State Bird Club. There are good things ahead here in Rhode Island as we hatch safe and creative ways to keep in touch with our members. Get the latest sightings and birding-related events, whether they're in person or virtual. Find us on Facebook and online at oceanstatebirdclub.org. Ocean State Bird Club.
Good morning. Welcome to our show number 787. The haunting cry of the bird some call the Great Northern Diver. Its official name, or common name, is common loon, and we'll learn about the threats it's facing and some of the things that are being done to protect it on this morning's show. Meanwhile, this week, the smallest state recorded the biggest sighting in a while in terms of rarity when a pteric sandpiper was spotted on Sunday morning, June 28th, at a place called Napa Tree Point in the southwest corner of Rhode Island. And the bird's been seen by many folks a number of times since. This is a bird that breeds in Finland and northern Russia and winters on the coasts of East Africa and Australia in South Asia, so quite an exciting sighting there in the ocean state. Well, this bird isn't nearly as rare as the pteric sandpiper, at least in northeastern North America, but it's mysterious nonetheless because it's our mystery bird. And here's a preview of this morning's mystery bird contest. Our bird is a small, inconspicuous songbird that feeds on insects found in the leaf litter of the forest floor. It has an olive brown back, white undersides with dark streaky spots, a white eye ring, and an orange crown stripe bordered in black. Our bird breeds over most of the northeast quadrant of the U.S. and through much of Canada, winters in Florida and points south, and it builds an unusual nest that gives the bird its name. Some pretty good clues there and some pretty good prizes too, including the Droll Yankees' new generation 13-inch metal finch sock that combines the attraction of a finch sock with the durability of metal, and it comes with the Droll Yankees' lifetime warranty against squirrel damage. There he is now. That's our mystery bird. That's a little preview of our contest coming up later in the show.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Some of the stories and videos right now on our TalkingBirds.com website and our Facebook page. Using a trail camera to make bird videos. We have some techniques and videos courtesy of Talking Birds listener and ambassador Elise Torello. Thank you, Elise. Have your Orioles disappeared? Don't worry, they'll be back. So says our Mike O'Connor, and we'll connect you to his newspaper column in which he says so. And we have another webcam connection for you, this time watching an Allen's hummingbird nest in Laverne, California. Some of the things on our TalkingBirds.com website and our Facebook page right now. And don't forget to check out our Instagram page for some fabulous photos and interesting stories.
I just want to thank you. I just want to thank you.
We have some folks to thank. We love our Talking Birds listeners. And we especially love our Talking Birds ambassadors, including new ones like Peter C. from Nottingham, New Hampshire, home of Pawtuckaway Lake and Pawtuckaway Park. Thank you, Peter. Thank you to Kim Hillis from Little Rock, Arkansas, home of Audubon, Arkansas, whose bird conservation director Dan Scheinman joined us here on the show a few weeks ago. And thank you, Kim. And thank you to Leona Matisse from Elliott Lake, Ontario, Canada. Leona is involved with something very exciting. It's the first ever Sault Ste. Marie Birding Festival scheduled for next May. Good luck with the festival, Leona, and please keep us updated. And of course, thanks for becoming a Talking Birds ambassador. That's something that we encourage, of course, and hope all Talking Birds listeners will consider doing, joining our ambassadors family. Easy to do. Just go to the Get Involved button at the top of the homepage at TalkingBirds.com. Still to come on our show today, another New Hampshire connection. We'll talk with the director of the Loon Preservation Committee there in the Granite State about their efforts to fight off the threats to the iconic common loon. Plus, we'll catch up with Mike O'Connor in an almost live from the archive installment of Let's Ask Mike about how he's watching the birds in his backyard on TV. And up next, some call it the Water Witch. We call it our featured feathered friend. Presented by Birdwatching Magazine. For more than a quarter century, Birdwatching has been North America's premier magazine about wild birds and birding. Today, we feature a bird of contradictions. It's rarely seen flying, but stray individuals have reached Hawaii and Europe.
Sur la baraque de Monsieur Pierre, on y va,
it swims like a duck, but doesn't have webbed feet. And although it's a diving bird that feeds on fish, it has a bill like a chicken. Another contradiction is that its name is associated with the magpie, even though it's not related to that bird. Our featured feathered friend is the pied billed grebe. The word pied is a shortened form of piebald, pie from magpie, and bald, meaning white patch or spot. It's a small, stocky, mostly brown bird with brown barring on the sides, and it has a white bill with a broad, black, vertical stripe in the middle. That's the pied bill. It's a bird whose folk names include dab chick, devil diver, dive dapper, hell diver, and water witch. Despite the fact that the pied-billed grebe doesn't have webbed feet, it still manages to be a good swimmer on the surface and underwater, thanks to its lobed toes that provide extra surface for paddling. It breeds all over the northern half of the U.S. and most of Canada, and winters through the southern states and points south, or wherever open water allows it to use those lobed toes to dive for fish and grab them in that chicken-like pied bill. It has a couple of vocalizations. This wail. And what's described as its greeting rattle. It's Potolimbus poticeps, the pied-billed grebe. Today's Talkin' Birds featured feathered friend. Welcome again to our show number 787. Hope you'll check out our website. It's talkinbirds.com. That bird seems like a pretty good one to lead into our next segment here on this morning's show. Harry Vogel is senior biologist and director of the Loon Preservation Committee based in Moultonboro, New Hampshire, and he joins us from there right now. Good morning, Harry.
Good morning, Ray. It's great to be on the show.
Well, great to have you, Harry, and great to know about the wonderful work you're doing with the Loon Preservation Committee, which is a very modest name for all the stuff that you guys do.
Yeah, you know, LPC, we have been working to preserve these birds since 1975, so that's 45 years of monitoring and research and management and education to recover our loon population here in New Hampshire.
Wow. Harry, what is it about loons? I mean, we always hear people who maybe are not even interested in birds particularly are just fascinated by loons. What's the magic?
Sure. Well, you know, what's not to like? These are impressive birds. So a big male in New Hampshire can run 15 pounds. They've got this striking black and white plumage. They have these blood red eyes. They have these distinctive and far-ranging calls. My favorite loon quote comes from a British researcher who way back in the 1950s described the nighttime calling of loons as a chorus from all of the devils in hell. And whether you love those sounds or they send chills up and down your spine, you know, you're not likely to forget them or the birds that made them.
Wow, okay. That's quite a quote. So I think loons, you can correct me on this, Harry, are doing reasonably well, generally speaking, across New Hampshire and in general. What is their status right now?
Yeah, so, you know, our population here in New Hampshire has more than quadrupled in size since the Loon Preservation Committee began in 1975. So last year we counted 313 pairs in New Hampshire. But they're still a threatened species in this state, and we're seeing growth of only about 1 to 1.5% per year despite some really intensive management of the species to mitigate human impacts.
Mm. It sounds like one of those species that's doing fairly well but will always require help from people.
I think that's probably very much the case in this new age, yeah.
Mm-hmm. In other parts of the country, too, have I read in Wisconsin they're not doing as well? I'm not sure if I have that right. Is that so?
You know, I think that overall populations seem to be kind of stable. But again, you know, New Hampshire is not alone. Vermont and Maine, upstate New York, and Minnesota and Michigan, all of those states have programs that are really dedicated to preserving loons. And they do a different mix of things, but often they're supplying these birds with nesting rafts to help these loons that have been displaced from their traditional sites because of development or recreational use of lakes. Many of these programs are putting signs and rope lines around these birds to, while they're on the nest, just to give them a little bit of the space that they need to be able to incubate those eggs and raise those chicks successfully. All of them are doing these educational programs just to encourage, you know, a culture of respect and appreciation for these birds. And certainly here in New Hampshire, we found that where we have been able to encourage that culture, that's where loons have thrived.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's some big threats to loons still, and the biggest one, I think we could talk about, Harry, as a four-letter word, and it's not hell. It would be lead.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So loons can ingest lead fishing tackle in several different ways. And so because loons have no teeth, they swallow small pebbles from the lake bottom, and they hold those pebbles in the gizzard, the muscular portion of their stomach, and they use those pebbles as surrogate teeth to grind up the fish that or the crayfish that they've just eaten. And one of the problems, of course, is that as they're looking for those pebbles, they may, in fact, pick up a small lead split-shot sinker instead. And so that's one way. But a loon may also ingest a fish that's broken free of an angler's line, and that fish is going to be trailing a length of line, maybe a lead sinker or a lead-headed jig as well, and that fish is going to be swimming a little bit slower than the fish next to it. It's going to be behaving a little bit erratically, and that's the fish a loon is going to zero in on as an easy meal. And when it gets the fish, it gets the hook and the line and the sinker or the jig as well. And then finally, if you're trolling tackle through the water, you know, you're trying to catch a fish, but you could catch a loon instead, because a loon's instinct is to strike at something if it flashes by it in the water.
Wow.
And the good news here, Ray, is that if that sinker or jig is made of anything other than lead, that loon is probably going to be just fine. But the smallest little split shot lead sinker that you can imagine, if ingested, is going to kill that bird within 2 to 4 weeks of ingesting it.
So a solution, a lead buyback program. We hear about gun buybacks, but you've started or initiated a lead buyback program in New Hampshire. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so, you know, this is the first program of its kind anywhere, and we have been working with New Hampshire Fish and Game and tackle shops throughout the state to provide these $10 vouchers to people who bring in their lead tackle so that they can buy new, non-toxic, loon-safe tackle. And so, you know, even if your listeners are not anglers, we would ask them to please spread the word to anyone that they know who fishes and ask them to just get rid of the tackle in that old tackle box before it gets used and kills a loon or other wildlife.
And by the way, we hear about, you know, gun buybacks, and people say, well, there are already so many guns out there, does it really make a difference? But with lead, if I'm not mistaken, Harry, it really does make a big difference, because the lead that's been there for a while will sink down and will no longer be accessible to loons, right? So it is that new stuff coming in that's important.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have great evidence that the lead that is being picked up by these birds is predominantly lead that is currently being used. And as you said, it makes sense, because, you know, lead is dense, it's heavy. Once it hits the lake, you know, the bottom of the lake, it tends to sink in to the sediments and become more or less inert. And we know this because, you know, if loons were simply picking up lead from this reservoir of tackle on the bottom, we would expect to get our first lead poisoned loon in April, and then get a relatively stable number of lead poisoned loons in all the way through till November or December, when loons leave our lakes. But instead, what we find is a dramatic peak right at this time of year, July and August, and that's coincident with peak lake use and peak fishing as well here in New Hampshire. And that's actually really good news, because that means that if we can stop the use of this lead fishing tackle, there should be an immediate benefit to our loon population.
So there's this kind of expanded right to new tackle laws in New Hampshire?
Yeah, absolutely. New Hampshire was actually the first state in the nation to have any sort of restrictions on the sale and use of lead sinkers and lead-headed jigs. And so right now it's actually illegal to use a sinker or a jig that's made out of lead that's 1 ounce or less in size. And so any tackle of that size range or that weight range has to just be made out of these other non-toxic materials.
Mm-hmm. What's the response, Harry, that you've heard from people who fish in terms of how it works if you have to use something other than lead?
Yeah, you know, there are so many things that you can make tackle out of, right? Mm-hmm. So there's like tin, bismuth, steel, tungsten, stone, these new composite materials, and some of them, you know, like tungsten, it's a little bit more expensive than lead, but not a lot more expensive, and anglers will actually say that it works better. You know, so it's actually denser than lead. It's a harder material. You get a better feel on the line for when using this tackle. And so, you know, for a long time, I mean, the most serious anglers had already switched away from lead even before we had introduced legislation to do that. But what we want, of course, is for everybody to not use it just because it's, lead is cheap. And it's readily available. It has a low melting point so that you don't have to put much energy into it to melt it and form it into a sinker or a jig. And for all of those reasons, unfortunately, it became the standard for fishing tackle. But that's before we knew just how deadly it was to loons, to other wildlife, and to people, for that matter.
Well, speaking of people, Harry, I think you've said there are two basic things that people should do when they're near loons or on a lake where loons are.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if there's two messages that we would like to leave people with and to help protect loons in New Hampshire or anywhere, number one is just give them some space. You know, and especially loons with chicks or loons on the nest, I always say the best way or the only way to get close to a pair of loons on the water or on the nest is with a good pair of binoculars. You know, the only way to take a picture is with a long telephoto lens. It's a full-time job for two loons to raise two chicks over the course of a breeding season, and we need to give them the space that they need to be able to do that. And then the other one, of course, is just clean out those old tackle boxes, don't put lead on the line.
We're almost out of time, Harry, but I know you guys do some serious research there with the Loon Preservation Committee with an amazing database. Tell us really quickly, if you could, about some of that.
Sure. So, you know, we have the advantage here of having gathered the longest running and the most complete database of loon populations and productivity that exists anywhere in the world. And that has allowed us to do things like look at the actual population level impacts of lead fishing tackle on loons, for example. We're now looking at 45 years of data to determine the issues of with weather, you know, so rain events and temperature events and things. Because loons are a northern species that nests right at the water's edge, as we look at a future that has more rain events and more heat waves and things of that nature, it probably spells nothing good for loons. And so we're actually trying to wrap our arms around exactly what's in store for loons in a new era of climate change and what we can do to help them.
Mm-hmm. Well, two websites we want to list here before we go. One is your main website. These are easy ones to remember, loon.org. And then all about the lead program and so on, about tackle, that's loonsafe.org. That's all made as one word. So loon.org and loonsafe.org. Harry, thanks so much for being with us, and thanks for your great work.
Well, thank you, Ray. I really appreciate the chance to talk about loons and appreciate you covering loons and the work of the Loon Preservation Committee on your show.
Thank you, Harry. Coming up next, it's our Mystery Bird Contest in just 1 minute.
The North American Butterfly Association is launching the Butterfly Habitat Network, a new continent-wide conservation initiative. Using decades of accumulated knowledge, NABA is scaling up efforts to protect, enhance, and create habitat specifically for butterflies. Butterflies are important pollinators of native plants and represent, as caterpillars, a major food resource for birds. Habitats critical to butterflies are essential to nesting waterfowl, neotropical migratory birds, upland game birds, and more. The NABA Board of Directors and staff have selected projects across North America as a starting point of the Butterfly Habitat Network. If we can save butterflies, we can save ourselves. It's more than just a slogan. It's the understanding that adequate, well-cared-for space for the wildlife of this planet will ensure survival and quality of life for human beings. Find out how you can help by visiting NABA.org.
Our Mystery Bird Contest is sponsored by Red Start Birding. Red Start Birding is your new resource for birding optics, gear, and expertise. Great birding starts at redstartbirding.com. And that's our mystery bird. It's a small, inconspicuous songbird that feeds on insects found in the leaf litter of the forest floor. It has an olive-brown back, white undersides with dark, streaky spots, a pretty prominent white eye ring, and an orange crown stripe bordered in black. Our bird breeds over most of the northeast quadrant of the U.S. and through much of Canada, winters in Florida and points south, and it builds an unusual nest that gives the bird its name. Those are, I think, some pretty strong clues and very strong prizes, including the Droll Yankees' new generation 13-inch metal finch sock, combining the attraction of a finch sock with the durability of metal. And it comes with the Droll Yankees lifetime warranty against squirrel damage. And a bonus prize, the app that makes learning bird sounds a game. It's the LarkWire app. You can get it for your iOS device if you have one of those, or for online access. The LarkWire app. Prizes and clues on our mystery bird and the sound of our bird. And now the phone number. 781-837-4900. Please call us as soon as you can so we'll have time for all that. 781-837-4900 is the number to call. 781-837-4900. Remember, if you don't get the right answer, you could still be a winner if nobody does get it exactly correct. Meanwhile, let's ask Mike almost live from the archive. Let's ask Mike in just 1 minute.
Talking Birds, we're for the birds. And we want to say thanks to another Talking Birds ambassador who's helping to spread the word about birds and conservation.
My name is Mary Langdon, and I'm calling from Anchorage, Alaska. We took this cool trip to Unalaska and got to see some exotic birds, and at the end ended up seeing a cuckoo that was identified by experts. And we ended up giving a car to a great birding guide there.
Talkin' Birds listeners, we hope you'll become a Talkin' Birds ambassador. Just visit our website, talkinbirds.com. Click on Get Involved at the top of the homepage and then choose the Become an Ambassador option. We'll send you some info cards to hand out to your friends and neighbors. That's Get Involved at talkinbirds.com. And thanks.
Down to Cape Cod now, location of the world-famous Birdwatchers General Store. That would be in Orleans on Cape Cod. And Mike O'Connor is there. We'll try to hear him above the din emanating from his backyard there. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning, Ray. Yeah, it's kind of a hectic scene here we got going on. The baby bird, I know we discussed this a few weeks ago, where we have a nest box full of great crested flycatchers. And so what I did was I put a little camera inside the box before they got there, and then I run it through the TV in the living room. I wanted it in the bedroom, but my wife wanted nothing to do with that. And so now that the babies have hatched, we have five hungry babies. They look scary as heck. They're just all furry and blotchy and blind, and they're whacking their heads back and forth, and their mouths are open. And then the parents are bringing them food back and forth. And the interesting part is these things are small. They're like the size. I don't know if you can hear them, and they never stop talking, even at night. They just yapping the whole time. And the parents bring them in this food. Now, a few years ago, I had a nest box with chickadees in it, and they would bring these little one-inch green inchworms and feed the babies. Well, these are flycatchers, and so they eat bugs that are considerably larger, and they're considerably larger than the babies themselves. They look, I think they're mostly dragonflies, but they look like the Wright brothers plane compared to the birds, and they shove them in the baby bird's mouth, and they don't fit. So you would think they'd choke, but no, the mother hammers, like loading a musket. They're shoving the food down, and the wings are sticking out. And they eventually go down. It's kind of crazy. I'm glad I don't eat like that.
Wow.
Although my kids do sometimes. But here we go.
Wow.
Can you hear that?
We can hear it loud and clear.
I'm afraid to get too close to the screen. I might get sucked in. And then she feeds them, and then the birds. My wife's impressed with this. After she feeds them, the bird kind of tips over a little bit and produces a little fecal sac, little bag of poop that the parents carry away. But in the first few days, the sacs weren't that big, and the mother would actually eat the sac on the spot. And my wife said, "Now that's a dedicated mother, because I don't think she would be willing to do that."
Yeah.
The energy you get out of a dragonfly, it's worth it. I might start eating them because they never calm down. They never get quiet, and they can't even see. They don't. Maybe if they saw what they were eating, they wouldn't be eating it in the first place.
And this is how many chicks again that you have there?
500. No, there's five. It sounds like 500, doesn't it?
It kind of does, yeah.
That's five, and the parents are able to keep them fed. And amazingly, these things look like nothing. I mean, like I said, they're like a chewed piece of gum. They're so creepy and gooey looking. And then 10 days from now, they're going to be free-flying a full-grown bird. It's crazy, crazy cool.
What a lovely bird you have there. Looks like a piece of, what was it, used
chewed gum.
Yes. What a flattering description. I love that. All right. I'll let you get back to the action, Mike.
All right. Well, I'll let you know when they fly a week or two from now.
All right. Mike O'Connor down there at the Birdwatchers General Store, Orleans, Cape Cod. You can still hear them. See you next week, Mike.
Okay.
For over a quarter century, Birdwatching Magazine has been North America's premier magazine about wild birds and birding. Regular contributors include expert birders and authors such as Ken Kaufman, David Sibley, Pete Dunn, Laura Erickson, and others. Learn more at birdwatchingdaily.com.
Welcome back to the Mystery Bird Contest. Here's our bird, a small, inconspicuous songbird. Feeds on insects found in the leaf litter of the forest floor. Has an olive brown back, white undersides with dark streaky spots, a white eye ring, and an orange crown stripe that's bordered in black. And Melissa is in New York somewhere. Good morning, Melissa.
Hi.
Good morning. Hi. New York City or elsewhere?
No, Westchester County, north of the city.
All right. Well, what do you say, Melissa, on our mystery bird?
Ruby crown kinglet.
Ruby crown kinglet is a really top quality guess. But that sound we're hearing indicates it's not what we were looking for exactly.
Okay.
Thank you, Melissa. Try us again.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. That's ruby crown kinglet. Yeah, that's got a little thing on the top of the head there with the little color thing. But not our mystery bird. Kathy is in Tangerine, Florida. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning.
Good morning. I know that name, Tangerine, Florida, because I believe that you're one of our new Talking Birds ambassadors. Am I right?
That is absolutely right. I'm excited to be an ambassador.
Well,
I love your show.
Well, thank you so much. We're excited to have you. And Tangerine is where exactly?
Well, I'm about 5 miles from the amazing Lake Apopka North Shore, which is home of the Lake Apopka Wildlife Drive, which is just an absolute fantastic birding spot.
Wow, well, fantastic, and thanks for telling us about it. And how about our mystery bird, Kathy?
Well, I believe it's one of our winter visitors, which I love. It's an oven bird.
Let me check. Yes! Oven bird is correct. Beautifully done, Kathy. Thank you so much, and if you'll stay on the line, Jesse will arrange to send you some fabulous prizes.
Excellent.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy, and thanks again for being an ambassador.
You're very welcome.
We are out of time for this morning's show. Next week, we'll unveil a new Talking Birds environmental initiative with a really funny name. We're pretty excited about it, and we hope you will be, too. Thanks to our amazing Talking Birds team, Debbie Bleacher, Freya McGregor. Audrey Stack is our special assistant, and producing engineer is Jesse Wilkins. I'm Ray Brown. See you next week.
Ray Brown's Talking Birds.
Made possible by the generous support of the Birdwatchers General Store, Orleans, Cape Cod. birdwatchersgeneralstore.com.
And proudly sponsored by Ocean State Bird Club. There are good things ahead here in Rhode Island as we hatch safe and creative ways to keep in touch with our members. Get the latest sightings and birding-related events, whether they're in person or virtual. Find us on Facebook and online at oceanstatebirdclub.org. Ocean State Bird Club.